Sex, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the speculative interdimensional vehicle, Sex in Space. Its mission, to explore new points of view, to seek out fresh opinions, to boldly go where so many have gone before, and still somehow manage to totally miss the point. Subscribe to Sex in Space, wherever quality podcasts are found.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Sex in Space. I'm here with my co-host, Toshi.
Hello.
Hello.
We have got a show for you today. We have an interview that I did with the wonderful Cindy Gallup, which is really bloody exciting. She's the founder of Make Love Not Porn. I learned a whole heap. She was super insightful. And so that's coming up. We've also got a bit of a dive into what's been going on our own socials, a couple of recommendations for you from the social world and the podcast world, and also our little sex quiz, the triple threat quiz. Yeah, all exciting stuff. We actually need to lob into the questions first, don't we?
Yeah,
because they're coming up at the end of the show.
Yes.
Answers at the end of the show. Do you want to read these questions out, Toshi?
Yes, okay. So, question one.
Yo.
What is the average age that kids are first watching porn? Question two. What is the average length of time that penetrative sex lasts? Okay. And question three. The average length of an American penis is 5 inches or 12.7 centimeters. So, what length of penis do gay and bisexual men picture in their fantasies?
Hmm.
Those are our questions.
Those are the questions for the day.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it, to get specific about a particular part of fantasy?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I've ever got out a measuring tape in any of my fantasies.
I was thinking, how did they do that?
How would you do that? Hey, these researchers, they've got their ways, their wily ways.
I'm figuring it out.
I know. Awesome. Okay. So, since we last spoke... I mean, we speak every day.
Mm.
But since we last did an episode, it's been kicking off in the TikTok world.
Yeah.
Has it not? That's our own TikTok channel, sexinspace.com. I mean, we were just merrily...
Trotting along.
Posting.
Putting videos up.
Yeah. And like one a week, kind of more.
I'd say like three a week, maybe.
Yeah. And so just, you know, just different content, different subjects, stuff like that, you know. And lo and behold, one of them just kicked off,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Just, I think it was about 2 weeks after we posted it as well.
Yeah.
Just kicked off and all of a sudden everybody was watching it.
Yeah. These TikTok algorithms.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, go on, break it down. What actually happened?
So in the video we were talking about cultural preferences regarding penis size, and we looked at... statues from antiquity and how a lot of them have these really muscular and, like, you know, defined men but with really tiny penises.
Yeah.
And that was just their cultural preference, because for them that was like a sign of being intelligent and having self-restraint, and, you know, you weren't wild and loose and couldn't control yourself.
That's right.
And so it was, you wanted to be depicted that way.
Yeah.
And so
the cultural preference of the time, and that's right, they're supposedly looked down on people
With large
phalluses. Yeah,
they were like, right, you can't control yourself if you have a large penis.
Yeah.
And we had many people saying either I am a Greek god, or people saying I am definitely not a Greek god and I must be stupid.
Yeah.
It's kind of the theme I noticed on our comments from that video.
Yeah. No, I think what was interesting was the kind of interaction that it generated, I guess.
Yeah.
It felt genuine, like people were really genuinely interacting with it. Plus it pushed our audience, or at least the viewers for that video, to a more male audience, didn't it?
Yeah, which is good, because I think, I mean, looking at our insights, we get a lot of, I would say we get often more female viewers.
Yeah.
And so this one was largely men, and a lot of them were of 30.
Yeah.
Looking at the ages as well, there was like 55 plus, had a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
Which was super interesting.
Yeah. And yeah, the views on that video are, what are they at the moment?
They are very close to 240,000.
Right.
239.9. So we can just round that up.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, 240,000. That's pretty crazy, right? Like for something that was, it just one evening just had gone from, you know.
Probably like 2,000 is what we usually get.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it would just started going crazy.
Yeah. And we've done videos about all sorts of topics, right? Vulvas and
the gaming world and how gendered it can be.
Yeah, lots of things like that. It's interesting that this is the one that kicked off. I don't know what that says about algorithms or people's preferences or what they, you know, the kind of content people are genuinely interacting with. I mean, I doubt that people are searching for that kind of content, but it was a lot of it was recommended, right? So
It wasn't like in the For You page, people were just, I guess, scrolling and their algorithms just naturally put it in there.
Yeah.
And I guess they felt interested enough to keep watching and
leave a
little comment.
Yeah. No, it's just been really interesting, isn't it, watching that kind of unfold. And just the insights that you sort of get from something like that, really. But anyway, yeah, definitely everybody should go and check out the other videos and that one on...
tell us what you think.
Yeah, on TikTok, yeah. Sexandspace.com, that's sexandspace, that's all one word. Sexandspace, DOTCOM, except that E in sex is spelled with a three.
Yeah, but I think if you type it in, it still pops up.
Yeah.
Because check on it from my other account.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure we're not being...
it still works. Yeah, not being shadow banned or something.
That's it, yeah, shadow banning.
Especially because I'm saying a lot of words that I'm pretty sure the TikTok wouldn't like.
Yeah, I know. I've spotted a few of the ones and the at symbols and stuff like that popping in there. That's good. The games we play, eh? Interesting, really interesting stuff. I guess, watch this space. Will it make it over quarter of a million?
I hope so. We haven't got far to go.
No, yeah. And it's funny as well because it every now and again has a little extra surge and slows down again and then has a little
and
surge.
And then picks up.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy stuff. Now, talking of social stuff, we obviously there's tons and tons going on out there that we could talk about, but we're doing the social recommends from either you or I or people that we're sort of interested in at the moment. So, who we got today?
Today, from Instagram and Twitter, we have Chanel Lal.
Yep.
Hope I'm pronouncing that right.
I think you could be.
So they are a columnist for the New Zealand Herald.
Mm-hmm.
Super active on social media. LGBT rights activist, political commentator.
Mm-hmm.
They focus mostly on New Zealand issues, but I've also seen them address things that are happening in the States, for example.
Yeah.
And so they'll often, you know, present something that's happening, but it is through their own lens and how they perceive it and their own comments on it.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really nice way to keep in touch with what's happening politically in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of conversation that happens in the comments too.
Yeah.
Which is always, even if I'm not engaging in the comments, just reading it, seeing what people think and their perspectives and maybe seeing, you know, two sides to an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always quite nice to just be like, okay, you know, what are people thinking about this thing that's happening?
Yeah, I found that it's they're really insightful from a point of view that I might not necessarily have thought of. I'm not saying that the issues that they are talking about, I would assume, and it seems to be the case that, you know, I'm normally on the same side as they are.
Yeah.
But I think that it's what they bring is really interesting insights. They're your age. I'm a shitload older. They're 23, I think.
Yeah.
They are South Asian, I think. And so, yeah, it's always very insightful to me, at any rate, the perspective that they bring that I haven't necessarily always thought of. So that's really good. So, yeah, what are they on? Sorry, their Instagram,
Twitter.
Yeah.
And I think it's helpful as well that they deliver what they're talking about in a very sort of short and punchy way.
Mm.
So you're not reading a massive long piece.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be maybe like a carousel post.
Yeah, yeah,
with 4 or 5 short tweets.
Yeah.
And you can get everything that you need from it.
Yeah, cool.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, insightful, thought-provoking stuff. Everyone should go check them out.
Mm.
And I would also like to get them on the show.
Yes.
That would be great. Okay, into podcast world. This episode's recommended listening is the Girls Get Off podcast. You can't miss them at the moment. They're currently number one in the New Zealand sexuality podcast charts.
Okay.
And yeah, we had them on the podcast last year. That was our episode 15, and that was great. We had a really, really awesome chat about the origins of their business and their approach to social media, and some of the sort of challenges they face as a business, but also kind of their driving values behind sort of what they're doing, because they're a sex toy brand, I guess would be their primary thing, but they have got a really great, you know, underlying values and message about sort of empowering pleasure and female pleasure, particularly. And yeah, their podcast is an absolute riot. It's a real hoot. It is, like, I guess it's slightly confronting sometimes, but it's I've really enjoyed it. They get a lot of experts on there. They, you know, talk about sex tips and stuff like that. It's right on brand for them. Mm. If anyone's followed them on their Instagram and stuff like that, you kind of know what the vibe is.
Yeah.
They've also got a couple of burner accounts, I think, on Instagram, and a kind of like closed Facebook group for the real juicy stuff.
I joined that, actually.
You joined that
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And the podcast is just more the same. It's, it's really good. So, yeah, definitely check that out.
Mm.
Currently number one in the charts, which is technically the charts that we would be in as well. So maybe we should stop recommending them and try and chase them down. But that's fine. Into our interview. Now, apologies. So we actually said last time that the next interview we would publish was with Joe Robertson, who's the sex therapist. But we got the chance to interview Cindy. She's up to some really interesting stuff at the moment. And so as a sort of time relevancy, I guess, and she's, I mean, you'll hear in the interview, she's calling for investors for the thing that she's up to. So we just thought, we'll just squeeze this one in. Joe will be along in the next episode. On to Cindy. On her website, Cindy describes herself as a brand and business innovator, a consultant, coach, and keynote speaker. We would also add to this list that she's a bloody fabulous, innovative sex activist, and has been for ages. She has a background in advertising, and she's, you know, works all over the world, but she stepped out of that to found the radical online space of Make Love Not Porn. And if you've not already heard about it, you will know about it after today. The sort of work that she's up to, she's reframing and opening space for healthy conversations about the ever-increasing bombardment of porn and sexual content that we're all exposed to at all ages, and using those conversations to facilitate better, more open and healthy sexual relationships. She also describes herself as an experienced and confident woman up for the challenge of re-education, rehabilitation and reorientation when it comes to sex. Yeah, a lot of the origin story that we sort of talk about in the interview has come from through her own experiences, but her approach to things and the sort of the values that underpin it all are really, really interesting and right in our wheelhouse. And a really great chat with her. So yeah, it's one of my faves to date. So we will stop waffling and jump into that. Okay, enjoy, everybody.
And now, the interview.
Hello, Cindy. Welcome to Sex and Space.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
For our listeners that do not know, Make Love Not Porn .tv, I think. Can you tell us what that's all about?
Sure. So I have a business that is a complete and total accident, because I never consciously, intentionally set out to do anything I very bizarrely find myself doing now. So Make Love Not Porn came about because I date younger men who tend to be men in their 20s. And about 15, 16 years ago now, I began realizing through dating younger men that I was encountering what happens when two things converge. And I stress the dual convergence, Tim, because most people think it's only one thing.
Yeah.
Whereas I was experiencing what happens when today's total freedom of access to hardcore porn online meets our society's equally total reluctance to talk openly and honestly about sex. When those two factors converge, porn becomes sex education by default in not a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And being a naturally action-oriented person, I went, I'm going to do something about this. So 14 years ago, I put up on no money a tiny clunky website at makelovenotporn.com that in its original iteration was just words. Mm-hmm. The construct was porn world versus real world. Here's what happens in the porn world. Here's what really happens in the real world. I launched Make Love Not Porn at TED in 2009. I became the only TED speaker to say the words come on my face on the TED stage, six times in succession. The talk went viral as a result, and it drove this extraordinary global response to my tiny website that I had never anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of people wrote to me from every single country in the world. Young and old, male and female, straight and gay, from New Zealand as well, by the way, pouring their hearts out. And I realized I'd uncovered a huge global social issue. And so that was when I felt, oh my God, I now have a personal responsibility. I have to take Make Love Not Porn forwards in a way that will make it much more far-reaching, helpful, and effective. And so I turned it into a business designed to do good and make money simultaneously. So today, Make Love Not Porn is the world's first and only user-generated, 100% human-curated social sex video sharing platform. So we're kind of what Facebook would be if it allowed you to socially, sexually self-express, which it doesn't. The way to think about us is, if porn is the Hollywood blockbuster movie, Make Love Not Porn is the badly needed documentary. We are a unique window onto the funny, messy, loving, wonderful, comical, awkward sex we all have in the real world.
Mm.
And what we're doing is we are socializing sex, normalizing it, bringing it out of the shadows into the sunlight to make it easier for everyone to talk about and to promote consent, communication, good sexual values, and good sexual behavior. We're literally sex education through real world demonstration. And we have a revenue sharing business model. So I foresaw the creator economy 14 years ago when I concepted this to democratize access to income. Our members pay to subscribe, rent, and stream social sex videos. Half the income goes to our contributors, whom we call our Make Love Not Porn stars.
Beautiful. That's incredible. The issues, just to sort of unpack a little bit, that you were, I suppose, personally confronted with back in, you know, when this was seeded in your mind. I guess would you call that even then in 2009, like the sort of pornification of sex? I mean, could you unpack a little bit? I mean, sure. I know it's personal, sure. But just kind of only because I
nothing's personal, because okay. I've been sharing this. So basically, Tim, I was the very first person to publicly stand on a stage at TED and identify the fact that when we don't talk openly and honestly about sex in the real world, porn becomes sex education by default in not a good way. And so today, if you go to makelovenotporn.tv, we have my TED talk on our homepage. And we also have the original makelovenotporn.com slides on our homepage as well, porn world versus real world. And every one of those slides in some form or other happened to me. So we have, you know, porn world, women have no hair down there.
Mm-hmm.
Real world, actually, you know, some women like shaving, waxing, others don't. Some men like, you know, pussies that are shaved and waxed, others don't. It's entirely a matter of personal taste. It's not that you have to do this. You know, we have porn world, you know, all men love coming on women's faces and all women love having their faces come on.
Mm-hmm.
Real world, again, some people like this, some people don't. It's just a really good idea to find out before you just go ahead and do it. You know, and honestly, what all of this boils down to really is, you know, understand that it's precisely because we don't talk about sex that porn is the only place people can go to see people having sex until I launched Make Love Not Porn, which answers the question we... But by the way, sorry, this is the New York hazard. There are sirens in the background. Is that a problem or
yeah,
not?
Yeah, no, I can hear them, but it's fine. It's all good.
Great, okay.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, you know, Make Love Not Porn solves for the question everybody really wants to know the answer to, which is, what is everybody else really doing in bed?
Mm.
And now, you know, we show you. And so, what is wonderful is that as a unique venture, we have a unique capability. We have the power to change people's sexual attitudes and behavior for the better in a way that nothing else can.
Mm.
And so we hear from our members every day telling us how, you know, we really help them. We saved their relationship. You know, we made them realize that sex doesn't have to be the way it is in porn, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Isn't that so interesting how people need to be shown? I suppose we're in such a, I don't know, it's such an all-encompassing culture that, you know, the light switch needs to be flicked before people were like, oh, actually, yes, you know. I don't know. It's interesting that reality is so skewed by culture, I guess.
It's not, because quite frankly, that is the case in every single area of our lives.
Mm.
My background is 38 years working in advertising, and I've spent a lot of that time campaigning for my industry to understand its responsibility and to respond to that in a way that would actually sell many more products and brands for our clients. Because here's an example of why Make Love Not Porn is so important. At Make Love Not Porn, our social sex videos are enormously reassuring because we celebrate real world everything. Real world bodies, real world hair, real world penis size, real world breast size, real world vulvas. And the reason that's important, Tim, is because you can talk body positivity all you like. You can preach self-love until you're blue in the face, but at the end of the day, nothing makes us feel good about our own bodies like seeing people who are no one's idea of aspirational body types getting turned on by each other,
mm-hmm.
desiring each other, having an amazing time in bed. In a world where every area of popular culture, including advertising, every day sends us all messages that tell us you are not hot, you are not sexually attractive, you are not desirable unless you are this skinny, six-pack abs, look like this. Our members write to us and tell us, you made me feel better about my own body. One man wrote and said, my girlfriend and I now feel able to be more open and central with each other because you made each of us feel better about our own bodies. That's incredibly important because, you know, I've been doing this for 14 years, and I'm regularly asked the same question in media interviews, which is, so Cindy, why do you think we're all so repressed about sex? And I'm asked this question so often, I have my answer down pat. Three reasons. Reason number one. So reason number one, centuries of repression, religion, socio-cultural dynamics in every single country in the world. You know, this is a universally global issue. Reason number two, the patriarchy.
Yeah.
Because historically, every institution, including government and religion, has been male-dominated. We as women have never been allowed to bring our lens to bear on human sexuality, and the world is a poorer place for it. And reason number three, very frankly, is that there are not enough people like me. And what I mean by that is the world makes it extraordinarily difficult to innovate and disrupt social narratives around sex. Many people have tried and given up, and I don't blame them because my life is shitty on a daily basis because of what I do and because of all the blocks and challenges to it.
Yeah.
And so we need many more people like me who will keep going no matter what to change the way the world thinks about sex.
That's fantastic. The some of those blocks, are you talking about, like online suppression and problems with finances and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So basically, yeah. Tim, I've fought a battle with my tiny team every single day for the past 14 years to build this venture and to keep it alive. Basically, because every piece of business infrastructure any other tech startup takes for granted, we can't. The small print always says no adult content. Right. And that is all pervasive across every single area of the business. Historically, couldn't get funded, couldn't get banked, couldn't put payments in place, couldn't use the tech services I want to. And, you know, the biggest business growth inhibitor is that we are banned from advertising anywhere. We cannot advertise on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Reddit, YouTube, Google, Snapchat, TikTok, and in traditional media. And it's not just us. There's a massively gendered bias at play. Any female-led sexual health and wellness venture, menstruation ventures, menopause ventures, fertility ventures, they are banned from advertising as well. In the meantime, male sexual health and wellness, not a problem. Yeah. Erectile dysfunction solutions, welcome everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I'm
following me around the internet.
So I am working to change all of that because I believe in building solutions to my own problems. And that's what I'm focused on raising funding for right now.
That's brilliant. Can I then ask this journey, I suppose, into this, I suppose must stem from the person that you are, how you grew up and various other factors. That actually interests me a little bit, like your own upbringing. I mean, you were born in the UK, is that right?
Yep.
And then went to Brunei, and I think formally educated over there in effect. Like, what was that like for you? What was that and sex education and...
Well, to be perfectly frank, Tim, none of that had anything to do with what I'm doing now because... No. You know, as the saying goes, the path appears.
Yeah.
And the path appeared when all of those people wrote to me after my TED talk. And I went, bloody hell, you know, I've uncovered a huge issue. And I had no idea the scale of that issue. As you say, I was born in the UK. I'm half English, half Chinese. My father was English. My mother's Malaysian Chinese. We moved to Brunei when I was six because my father got a job there. I grew up in Brunei, which I always have to explain is a lot more boring than it sounds.
Okay.
It's, you know, a very small place and not a lot going on, Orthodox Muslim, you know, et cetera. My parents regularly apologized to me and my sisters for our childhood, by the way, because, Brunei obviously, you know, is rich in Muslim and Malay culture, but it was very devoid of, you know, films and music and literature and, you know, all of those things that contribute to a cultural upbringing. The good thing about it was that I absolutely bring a global perspective to everything I do as a result of all the other places I've lived and how much traveling I've done. So it certainly helped in that respect.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, but so again, I mean, you know, only as much as you're comfortable with sharing, but like in terms of like your sexual upbringing and you know, did you get a chance to sort of talk to your parents? Did you have a full
No. So like many people, my parents never talked about sex, I'm half Chinese and grew up in Asia, and that particularly societally is not about being open about sex. The extent of my mother's conversation to me and my sisters was, girls, you stay virgin till you marry, that was about it. So the moment I began having sex as an adult, I went, fuck me, this is amazing. This is fabulous. Why are we so messed up about it? And so that undoubtedly, ultimately factored into, the moment of revelation with my TED talk and the way the world reacted to it. But there was no particular through line, is what I'm saying, between that and Make Love Not Porn.
No, that's interesting. So I was going to say, in terms of like your sort of growth, I guess, sexual influences into being a sort of sexual being that would then, start Make Love Not Porn is... There's no clear line, but
it's the fundamental truth about all entrepreneurs, Tim, especially female ones. you know, every one of us encountered a personal problem and designed a solution.
Yeah.
You know, I encountered an issue in bed with younger men that would never have crossed my mind if I had not encountered it very directly and personally. I went, you know, found myself encountering a number of sexual behavioral memes in bed. I went, whoa, I know where that's coming from.
Yeah.
I thought, gosh, if I'm experiencing this, other people must be as well. 16 years ago, I didn't know that because at that time, nobody was talking about this. Nobody was writing about it. This was just me, as I said, a naturally action-oriented person going, I want to do something to solve this. And that was where the idea came from. But that is very much the principle of, you know, many entrepreneurs basically, you know, encounter a personal issue, build a solution to it, and then find that millions of people welcome that solution.
Yeah. In terms of the sort of feedback that you've talked about from people using Make Love Not TV, what are some of the sort of the negative effects that they've said that they've overcome? I mean, I'm quite interested in that from a female perspective, but from a male perspective as well, and other, you know, gender diverse bodies and stuff like that. That's really interesting.
Sure. So first of all, Tim, what is very important at Make Love Not Porn is not just what we do, but the way that we do it. Because as I said earlier, we are socializing and normalizing sex, bringing it into the mainstream. So everything about our website is consciously, intentionally designed to do that. So for example, back when we were building the site, my brilliant lead user experience designer, Uni Chase, said to me, everything on the internet is dark and black, we're going to be white. And so that's why our website has a white background, because we are bringing sex out of the dark shadows and into the sunlight.
Yeah.
And so a very important part of what we do is that we are what I call a shame changer. We are taking the shame, guilt, and embarrassment out of sex. We're destigmatizing it. So people really respond to that. But you know, here's something very interesting. So we celebrate real world emotions at Make Love Not Porn. Love, intimacy, feelings. And the reason that's crucial is because, again, all around us in popular culture, we see, you know, TV, movies, Netflix, we see many creative expressions and narratives of relationships, but we never see the actual sex. On Make Love Not Porn, you see the actual sex, but you also see the relationships. Because in our videos, those two things are indivisible.
Mm.
And when I say that, I don't mean just that in our coupled partnered threesome videos, you see healthy relationship dynamics within sex. In our many solo videos, because we have a ton of, you know, male, female, trans, non-binary masturbation videos, you see in those videos what it's like to have a healthy relationship with yourself, with your own body, your own genitals, your own sexuality. And what is especially interesting is, so I designed Make Love Not Porn to be fully diverse and inclusive, and it is. You know, our members and our Make Love Not Porn stars are straight, LGBTQ, as I said, male, female, trans, non-binary, asexual, all races, ethnicities. But in the 10 years we've operated as a business, we've especially observed that we come as a major revelation to men.
Mm-hmm.
We probably get more appreciative emails and comments on our videos from men than anybody else, because we are something unique that men will find nowhere else on the internet, which is a safe space where men can be and watch other men being open, emotional, and vulnerable around sex. You wouldn't believe the number of men who write to us and say, I just watched my first video, Make Love Not Porn, and afterwards I cried. I've been saying for years, I wish society understood the opposite of what it thinks is true. Women enjoy sex just as much as men, and men are just as romantic as women. Yet neither gender is allowed to openly celebrate either fact. We'd all be a whole lot better off if they were. I picked up a wonderful exchange on Twitter last year between two men. The first man had tweeted, this is obviously a joke, he tweeted, hey guys, got this really weird fetish. I've got this kink where I want to watch porn where people are honest, loving, loyal, decent, and really like each other. Hit me up with your hottest links, please.
Yeah.
Another man replied to him and he said, there's this website called Make Love Not Porn where you can see real couples fucking and making love. He said, I watched a video where the woman said to her man, I love you, while they're making love. He said, sincerely, I cried when I heard that. We are one of the solutions to toxic masculinity.
Amazing. And that's And I guess that's true, right? Because what a mainstream narrative of porn is, you know, male dominated, masculine, you know, preferencing male pleasure, those sorts of things. There's not much vulnerability, right? But
again, porn is scripted, produced, performative entertainment.
Yeah, by men. Porn,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, through the male lens. And make love not porn is what we're all doing in the real world, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, what that means is, you know, we get amazing emails from our community every day saying, you saved our marriage, you saved our relationship, you made me feel better about my own body, you know, you made me feel able to talk about sex with my children more openly. And actually, what is really interesting, Tim, is, you know, how well Make Love Not Porn does everything I design it to do, but how well it does things that I never consciously designed to do. So, for example, we hear regularly from survivors of rape, sexual assault, sexual abuse. We hear from female and male survivors and trans non-binary survivors who tell us that Make Love Not Porn helped them reclaim their bodies. We help them feel able to be sexual again in a scenario where porn is obviously way too triggering in this context. Mm. And it's not just our members who view our videos. We have a number of Make Love Not Porn stars who have told us that being able to share their real world sex in a completely safe and trustworthy space has helped them process and heal from sexual trauma and abuse. Mm. And I never, you know, thought of that as a use case when I was designing the platform. So that is absolutely wonderful to hear. It is extraordinary, the transformative power of being open and normal about sex and enabling people to feel comfortable in themselves as sexual beings. It's absolutely amazing.
I was going to say that the knock-on effects must be incredible, because a mainstream narrative is, you know, revenge porn or you know, sharing intimate pictures, and you know, it's all a little bit, you know, shamey, isn't it? But to go and own that and be like, yeah, here it is, and you know, all the good things about it.
Yeah, but I mean, I talk about the fact that when I get Make Love Not Porn funded to scale as the Facebook of social sex, which is how big we want to be globally, one of these side benefits will be that nobody will ever have to worry ever again about having a naked photograph or a sex video themselves on the internet, because it's simply just a natural, normal human part of who we all are.
Mm. Yeah. So the people that are your not porn stars, your Make Love Not Porn stars, are they... How do they, what's the sort of the things that they have to go through to decide they actually want to publish these videos? Like, I guess, is it about, you know, in some case, exhibitionism or enjoyment?
So the vast majority of our Make Love Not Porn stars had never, ever filmed themselves doing anything sexual before, ever.
Mm.
They're doing it for us because they believe in our social mission.
Yeah.
And so what I've done, Tim, is, so I designed Make Love Not Porn around my own beliefs and philosophies, one of which is that everything in life starts with you and your values. So I regularly ask people this question: what are your sexual values? And nobody can ever answer me, because we're not taught to think like that. Our parents bring us up to have good manners, a work ethic, sense of responsibility, accountability. Nobody ever brings us up to behave well in bed. But they should, because in bed, values like empathy, sensitivity, generosity, kindness, honesty, trust, respect are as important as those values are in every other area of our lives where we're actively taught to exercise them. So I have built a community around shared social and sexual values. And so our Make Love Not Porn stars come to us. And by the way, you know, bear in mind, Tim, we are banned from advertising.
Yeah.
We cannot promote ourselves anywhere. They find us. And by the way, our video submissions rate keeps increasing. Right now, we're getting 5 to 6 video submissions per day with no advertising.
Yeah.
Okay. Imagine what we can do with funding. But basically, they find their way to us through, you know, hearing about us in the media, recommended by a friend. And each Make Love Not Porn star has their personal journey, you know, which we ask them, anyone who's willing to actually write about for our blog. You know, we have, for example, we have a number of these Make Love Not Porn stars, people who come from very repressive religious upbringings, you know. So we have one married couple who, you know, both come from fundamentalist Christian homes, you know, got married very young, came across Make Love Not Porn in a magazine, and they said to each other, we have to do this to overcome the shame and repression around sex imposed on us by our religious upbringing. So they filmed themselves having sex for the first time ever and shared it on Make Love Not Porn and found it a fantastically liberating experience, as have other, you know, Christian Make Love Not Porn stars. So that's one journey. You know, we have a lot of members, you know, who start off as members and really enjoy our videos, and then they go, ooh, let's do this too. You know, so that's how some people find their way to us. We have, with our solo Make Love Not Porn stars, you know, one young woman posted a video a few months back. And in her intro to it, she said, all my life, I've been told my vulva's ugly. I've been told it's too big, too flappy, too meaty. She went, I don't agree. And so I thought, what the hell? I'm going to share a video on here and see what you all think. And so she shared a video of herself masturbating. And our community is wonderful. Within less than an hour, the comments were, oh my God, you're beautiful. What are they talking about? You're gorgeous. You know, it's enormously affirming for our Make Love Not Porn stars, you know, to share themselves, as I say, within a very safe space. Mm. And to make our listeners aware of how safe that space is, and I want to contextualize this in the broader tech landscape as a whole. The young white male founders of the giant tech platforms that dominate our lives today, they are not the primary targets, online or offline, of harassment, abuse, sexual assault, violence, rape, racism, revenge porn. Therefore, they did not and they do not proactively design for the prevention of any of those things on their platforms. And we see the results around us every single day.
Yeah.
Those of us who are most at risk every single day, women, Black people, people of color, LGBTQ, the disabled, we design safe spaces and safe experiences. I and my tiny team spent literally years concepting and designing Make Love Not Porn before we ever built it, because we knew if we were going to invite people to something they've never done before, socially share their real world sex, we had to think through every possible ramification of that to design a completely safe and trustworthy space. Mm. And as a result, you know, not only do we operate unlike anybody else in the adult sphere, we operate unlike anybody else on the internet, period. Because I designed Make Love Not Porn through the female lens to be the safest place on the internet. I designed it around what everybody else should have, nobody else did, human curation. There is no self-publishing of anything on Make Love Not Porn. Our curators watch every frame of every video submitted from beginning to end before we approve or reject, and we publish it. No one else does that. We review every post on every member profile. Photos, text, illustration. And by the way, on Make Love Not Porn, those posts can be as safe work or not safe work as you like, but we review them. We approve and we publish them. Nobody else does that. We review every single comment on every single video before we approve or reject and we publish it. No one else does that. We can vouch for every single piece of content on our platform in a way that nobody else can, and that is why we are the safest place on the internet.
Yeah, amazing. And I mean, that just screams through. I mean, when you talk about the diversity of people that are uploading and using your space and stuff like that, so that's amazing. And like you said, the learnings from way back in 2009 to now, in terms of the feedback and everything else that you've learned on this journey, must just be incredible. The obvious sort of next step then is the vision for Make Love Not Porn Academy, am I right? Which is moving the lens to a more education space directly. Am I correct?
Right. So I've spent the past 14 years parallel pathing two things, working to build Make Love Not Porn and working to change the cultural and business context around it. Because when you have a truly world-changing startup, you have to change the world to fit it, not the other way around.
Yeah.
So I have kept Make Love Not Porn operational as a business for 10 years on just $3 million of funding, which is an extraordinary feat. And so I am now raising a serious round of funding. I'm raising $17 million to do four things: to scale the core business and then to build out three product extensions, two of which I've had in the pipeline for years, I've talked about publicly for years, but have not until now been able to find investors willing to fund them. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to report that, you know, 14 years of work has absolutely made those barriers fall. So the first product expansion is a really obvious one, because parents and teachers began writing to me from day one of Make Love Not Porn, saying, please, can you build out a sex education version of this? And so I am raising funding to build a 0-18 version of Make Love Not Porn, makelovenotporn.academy. I bought the URL many years ago. There's a very old holding page there, temporarily. But basically, this is what I characterize as the Khan Academy of sex education. Because Khan Academy, the online tutoring platform, tutors on every other topic under the sun except this one. Educational technology, edtech, is exploding as a category, not in this area.
Yeah.
So I want to build the academy along the same principles as makelovenotporn.tv, user-generated, crowdsourced, curated revenue share. Because I'm not about reinventing the wheel. This is an aggregation play. I want to build the go-to global hub for the world's sex education content. So the way it will work, when I've raised the funding I need to do this, is, you know, we'll build the academy platform and open it up to sex educators all around the world and invite them to share with us their own content, coursework materials, books, videos, comic strips, whatever it may be. We will curate. At the heart of everything we do lies human curation. We only publish what we endorse. And we will then publish all this content segmented by age appropriateness. So if you're a parent freaking out going, oh my God, my 6-year-old was asked about this. What am I going to say? You know, here's where you would go for entirely age-appropriate tools and content to be able to have that conversation with a 6-year-old. If you're a teacher with a class of 14-year-olds, you know, here are your age-appropriate teaching materials. If you're an adult, access all areas, because adults are desperate for all this information as well. But the important thing, Tim, is that the academy will be where children and young people can access sex education without parental teacher gatekeeping. And here's the reason why that's important. I have a friend who's a mother who, as you have to these days, monitors her kids' browsing history.
Yeah.
And this happened a few years ago when her son was 8 years old. She saw that on the family computer, he'd Googled sex for children. So she freaked out somewhat, but did the right thing. Stayed calm, sat him down, went, darling, you know, I see you've done this. Talk me through it. And this anecdote is adorable and horrifying in equal measure, because her son wanted to learn about sex. He was a child. He knew he was a child. He wanted to learn about sex in a child-appropriate way.
Yeah.
And so very innocently and naively Googled sex for children. You can imagine what came back. He was utterly traumatized.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the idea with the academy is that an 8-year-old boy can enter his age and we will serve him entirely age-appropriate sex education content.
Mm.
Now, some of this, like that example, will be free to access, but we'll also charge to download, subscribe, bulk buy if you're a school. There are different revenue streams, different use cases. And we will then split the income 50-50 with its creators, the educators, the same way we do with our Make Love Not Porn stars.
Mm.
Because right now, nobody goes into sex education to make money. I have friends who are brilliant sex educators. They have all the same problems I do. Their content gets blocked on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. You know, they can't make a living doing this. I want to change that because this is enormously valuable work.
It is very valuable. And I imagine in similar ways to makelovenotporn.tv, the cultural spread that you'll open up will be phenomenal as well for different, not just the ages range, but culturally as well, those different things that a lot of people aren't exposed to. So that'll be...
No, you're absolutely right, Tim, because, you know, for example, you know, I have a network of brilliant sex educator friends all around the world, and one of them is an amazing woman based in India called Paramita Vora. Her background is filmmaking. And some years back, she started a company called Agents of Ish, which is the Hindi term for love and desire. And what they do is they make culturally appropriate, sensitive sex education in India.
Okay.
And it's brilliant. You know, they make videos that spoof Bollywood musical numbers to talk about consent. And, you know, whenever she produces a new film, I share the shit out of it. But I said to her some time back, Paro, why do your videos only get 30,000 views on YouTube? And she said, because I can't run them anywhere in India, which is obviously very, you know, repressive, you know. And so, you know, imagine when I can showcase her work on the Academy, the benefit to not just people in India, but the Indian diaspora all around the world, to be able to access sex education by your community, for your community. And the important thing too, Tim, is I'm out to prove concept, because for 14 years, people have said to me, oh, Cindy, you should be in schools. You know, you should get Make Love Porn on the curriculum. And I've gone, no, I shouldn't, because anyone trying to get sex ed into schools comes up against the Parent Teacher Association, moral panic, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the people currently keeping sex ed out of schools don't know what it'd be like if they allowed it in. They just know it'd be really bad.
Mm.
In their heads, they have this abstract concept of Sodom and Gomorrah will ensue.
Absolutely.
And so when I can show you, gathered in one place, on one platform, the world's sex education content, and you can see for yourself how brilliant, healthy, educational, informational it is, that is what then gets sex ed into schools, because no one's ever done that before.
Yeah.
And so I'm out to prove concept.
So they'll be the ones that are left behind, essentially, you know, if they don't.
They'll finally be able to see that they can pick and choose, to your point, they can pick and choose according to their sensitivities.
Mm.
But this is actually what it looks like when you have a ton of brilliant sex education in one place, because no one's ever done that before.
I think it'll be amazing. It's always astounded me how, and this is just, you know, very much from my own cultural perspective and experiences and upbringing, that pleasure just isn't mentioned at all. Like for me, and I don't know, I'm not trying to overlay that into other cultures and how they would approach the same subject, but for me, pleasure is the underlying sort of thing across all sex education. Everything just fits quite neatly on top. Like, you know, you can have the conversations around, you know, reproductive this and that and the other, but it all seems to stem from an understanding of pleasure seems to be quite important at the beginning.
Tim, absolutely right. It's crucial.
Yeah.
I have another friend who's a mother, that this woman is much older. And so she was telling me the other day about how when her daughter was 15, she thought, ooh, you know, I should probably sit down with her and have the sex talk.
Yeah.
So she sat down with her daughter and her daughter said to her, you're too late. And my friend, by her own admission, reacted very badly to discovering that her 15-year-old daughter was having sex. So much so that shut down the conversation between them for many years, that they couldn't go there ever again. And my friend felt terrible about this. And so many years later, when her daughter was an adult, she sat her down again and said, listen, I just want you to know that I want to apologize to you for the way I reacted in that conversation. And her daughter said something really telling. She said, all I wanted to know was that you enjoyed it. Mm. Pleasure is absolutely the message that we should be giving in all educational conversations. Parents should be open with their children. Yes, we really enjoy sex. And one day when you're old enough, you're going to have a wonderful time. And here are just some things you need to be aware of around that.
Yeah.
Absolutely, start with pleasure. But because again, you know, it's so ridiculous, Tim, that in all the moral panic around porn, okay, people go, oh, you know, watching porn does this, watching porn. And by the way, the issue isn't porn. The issue is we don't talk about sex in the real world.
Yeah.
You know, if we did, people would bring a real world mindset to watching what is performative produced entertainment. But what people are losing sight of in those conversations is nobody's watching porn, they're wanking. Okay, this is not entertainment you watch. It's entertainment you masturbate to.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody's acknowledging that. Of course they're going to be aroused. You know, I remember years ago, you know, a journalist, and this is how ridiculous things have gotten, saying to me very earnestly in an interview, so Cindy, why do you think it is that we enjoy watching people having sex? And I just burst into hysterical laughter, rolled out of going, oh, for fuck's sake. You know, we're all sexual beings. Of course we enjoy watching people having sex. And so, you know, what is being shut out of the educational conversations is, you know, you watch sexually stimulating material, you're going to get a hard on. Your pussy's going to get wet. You know, that's because it is a pleasurable activity. You are going to get aroused. And but, you know, A, you should know that, you know, porn is not what real sex is like. B, here are things you should know about it. I mean, this is why, Tim, I recommend to every parent two key pieces of advice. By the way, I can't wait to launch Academy and be able to put these up, you know, so that everyone can access them. But, you know, piece of advice number one is, today, you cannot begin talking to your child about sex too early. And when I say that, I don't mean literally talk about sex. What I mean is, the very first time your child asks where babies come from, you know, plays with the genitals, the most important thing isn't even what you say as much as how you say it. Mm. Never, ever get visibly flustered. Never get embarrassed. You know, never shut them up. Never change the topic. Never leave the room. Instead, answer them calmly, straightforwardly, honestly, and you will open up a channel of communication for them that will always be there as they get older. And then the second thing I tell parents is, today, when you talk to your child about sex, no matter how early, you must also talk to your child about porn. And it's a lot easier to do than most parents think, because all you have to do is say a version of what I'm about to give you, and you dial it up or down depending on the age of the child. Mm. So you go, darling, so we've just talked about sex, and you know how together we watch movies and videos and cartoons where things happen that aren't real. Well, there are also movies and videos about sex, and they're not real either. And because of that, they can be quite confusing. So we'd rather you didn't watch them until you're older. But if anybody ever shows you something like that, or you stumble across it, come and talk to us, we can explain it. That's all you have to say. Because just by saying that, you've done two very important things. Number one, you have set up in their heads for when they stumble across porn, as they will, it's not real. Yeah. And number two, you have said, come and talk to us, come and talk to me about it. Because what they stumble across can be utterly traumatizing.
Mm. Yeah, I bet. And I'm in a context of, you know, whatever school age they are when they come across that. You know, there'll be other layers of like, oh, this is taboo, this is secret, don't tell so-and-so, so-and-so, and all of the stuff that other, you know, the context of how they found it might sort of bring into it. So that's really interesting. The other, I wonder, through doing this initially, and again, you know, keeping your finger on the pulse, sort of the speed with which cultural shifts around sex, you know, from porn and various other influences, but the speed with which all that stuff seems to change. And I mean, for me, I would say, yeah, from 2007 to, you know, to now, you know, where I suppose, you know, looking back at things like porn coming on people's faces, kind of relatively normal mainstream, you know, at certain points. Now it's long gone, forgotten in the archives for some new trend of, I don't know, something.
No, Tim. First of all, sex and porn concurrently have existed since the dawn of time. Okay. Oh, yeah. You know, we have the precedent, you know, whatever. And the really important thing to realize is, everything you see in porn, somebody somewhere adores doing. Okay, oh. Millions of somebodies. Okay? Yeah. You know, the issue isn't the acts. The issue is, again, the lack of healthy conversation, education around sex in the real world. Mm. Because, you know, it's all about finding out what people enjoy and then making sure you're only doing what you both enjoy. And by the way, the interesting thing with Make Love Not Porn is that the 10 years we've been going, we can trace with both our Make Love Not Porn stars and our members, the more they are exposed to what people in the real world are doing, the more that encourages them to experiment and expand their sexual horizons. Mm. So, you know, we had a comment in one of our videos recently where they were doing something fun and one man said, oh my God, this is fantastic. I'd only ever seen this done in porn. I'd always want to try it. I showed this video to my wife. She said, let's try that. We did, it was amazing. I love you guys. Okay, so the key thing is not, you know, the issue with porn is absolutely not what anybody's doing within it. The issue is that, and a lot of people don't know this, The porn industry is dominated by one massive monopoly. One company called MindGeek owns everything. MindGeek owns Pornhub, YouPorn, RedTube, Sex.com, Brazzers, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And what that means is that, you know, a male-dominated, male-led, male lens company has a monopoly in a way that suggests that what you are seeing on all of their tube sites is the only way that sex happens. And that's obviously not the case. I have a ton of brilliant female queer pornographer friends who are making really innovative, very creative porn. There's nothing like the homepage of Pornhub. But because of the stranglehold MindGeek has on the industry, you know, they can't get the traffic and numbers and revenue they deserve. And by the way, in any other industry, antitrust legislation would have come into play long since, but nobody wants to turn that lens on porn. Yes. So that's one of the issues. Also, you know, again, going back to what people like doing. So I find it very ironic that when the media shrieks and squawks about porn, they only ever shriek and squawk about one genre of porn, which again is the one you know do very often find on the homepage of tube sites, which is straight porn where the man is dominating women and the women are submitting some form or other. Funny enough, the media never shrieks and squawks about that massive genre of porn that is for men who adore being dominated by and submitting to women, and women who love dominating men and having them submit to them. And because we never hear about that in the media, out there in the world are millions of men who would adore to be dominated in the bedroom, millions of women who would adore to dominate who never, ever will. Because the reason the media doesn't talk about that is that it does not accord with our societal construct of masculinity. And those men and women will never do that because it doesn't accord with, you know, traditional gender roles. Now, I get very frustrated when people use the word porn like it's all one big homogenous mass. Because that's like using the word literature to say it's all the same thing. It's not. The landscape of porn is as rich and infinitely varied as the landscape of literature. There are as many genres, subgenres, but the media and popular culture drives one narrative. I've spent 14 years trying to get people to see the nuance in this one area of universal human behavior and experience that we are all most fucked up about.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting just hearing you unpack my badly framed question. That yes, you're absolutely right. Porn isn't the issue, or any of the stuff kind of really going on. It's the conversation that needs to be slotted in just before. Exactly what you said about, you know, speaking to kids, speaking to anybody, drawing that distinction and connection and eye-opening revelation that porn has, you know, porn's there, but there's an understanding that has to be in place.
So here's my vision. When, as I said earlier, Tim, you know, I have gotten Make Love Not Porn funded to scale. Here's what will happen when I'm able to have the impact I want to have in the world. Parents will then bring their children up openly to have good sexual values and behavior in exactly the same way that they currently openly bring their kids up to have good values and behavior in every other area of life. We will therefore cease to bring up rapists, because the only way that you end rape culture, and by the way, this really is the only way, is by inculcating in society an openly talked about, promoted, understood and operated gold standard out there in society of what constitutes the good sexual values, good sexual behavior that everyone should aspire to. When we do that, we also end Me Too. We end sexual harassment, abuse, violence, all areas where the perpetrators currently rely on the fact that we do not talk about sex to ensure victims never speak up, never go to authorities, never tell anybody. When we end that, we massively empower women and girls worldwide. When we do that, we create a far happier world for everybody, including men. And when we do that, we are one step closer to world peace.
Oh, I was just about to say, world peace. Yes.
I talk about Make Love Porn as my attempt to bring about world peace, and I'm not joking.
I think it would be a fantastic outcome. Apart from all the other fantastic outcomes, that would be the cherry on the top. Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, this might sound a bit of a weird loop, but through all your learnings, personally and you know, about this, having delved into this, is there anything that you sort of wished you'd known growing up, do you think?
Oh gosh, absolutely wish I'd had what I want everyone to have. You know, open, healthy sex education from day one, basically. Absolutely the message about pleasure, you know. I would have loved that, totally.
I mean,
I'm very lucky in that I found my own path to it and I wasn't too fucked up about it. And I'm also very lucky that I've never been raped, which is depressingly rare within the female population. I mean, I would have absolutely benefited from all this as much as I'm now trying to bring it to everybody.
Yeah. No, it sounds very, very exciting. And is there anything else that, if you could, you would be paying attention to? Obviously, it sounds like you have your hands full, and your wild ponies, you know, you're trying to control them all. What else should or could other people be doing kind of in this space better, do you think? I mean, what are the missing pieces that would even make this project go easier for you? I mean, if the banking industry was differently regulated or anything like that.
So do you know, that's a great question, by the way. And the answer is very simply, there is one thing and one thing only that would be utterly transformative for me and everyone else working in sex tech, which is to get as much funding as white bros do for utterly trivial tech ventures. Okay? So access to capital is the only thing we need to absolutely transform this. And, you know, it's ironic because, as I said, I'm raising funding at the moment. And one investor said to me, Cindy, the only market bigger than yours is water. And they were absolutely right.
Right.
You know? So here's what is both my challenge, but also, interestingly, how I'm finding my kind of investors. So I've always known that my investors are out there. There are a ton of them. And by the way, there are a ton of them in every country in the world. There'll be a ton of them in New Zealand. They are impossible to find by the usual means because they all have one thing in common. Your willingness to fund Make Love Not Porn is entirely a function of your personal sexual journey. It is a function of your personal lens on sex and sexuality that's been shaped by your own experience. And I have no way to research and target for that. Especially because sex is the one area where you cannot tell from the outside what anybody thinks on the inside. The people who look like they would totally get it don't. The people who look like complete prudes do.
Yeah.
So my strategy to find investors has been, I deliberately put what I'm doing out there all the time. I promote Make My Porn across all my social channels. I do every media interview. I go on every podcast because I have to make synaptic connections happen that will attract those investors to me. Now, this is ostensibly a long, slow, painful, and highly inefficient process. The good news is, every so often it works, and even better news is, in the past year, it's been working more and more. I am frankly gobsmacked at the amount of incoming investor outreach I get on LinkedIn.
Awesome.
I have investors writing to me on LinkedIn going, I see you're raising funding, I'd like to talk. I'm intrigued, tell me more. And so this is enormously encouraging because there are now more and more hard-headed businessmen and women, business people, who are absolutely seeing the potential to do a huge amount of good and make a huge amount of money. And honestly, it's so great after all these years to be talking to people who absolutely get it and want to fund me. And so, you know, I'm in the process of, you know, raising this round at the moment, but I feel very optimistic because, you know, there are people who get that this is where you get the biggest financial returns, especially right now in an economic downturn, because Make Love Not Porn is recession-proof and the market never, ever goes away.
I was going to say, that is absolutely recession-proof, isn't it? That's so interesting. So is there anything else that we haven't talked about? That you deem worth mentioning?
Sure. So I get a lot of people saying to me, Cindy, you know, I love what you're doing with Make Love Not Porn. You know, I've joined, I've subscribed to support you. If I had money, I'd totally fund you, but I don't. You know, what else can I do to support what you're doing? And my response is always, you know, let me give you one micro action. And that is, every day, talk about sex. And when I say that, again, I don't mean, oh, I don't talk about, what I mean is, if, you know, in the course of your daily life, your work life, you are having a conversation with somebody or several people where if we were not so messed up about it, it'd be perfectly natural to mention sex, do that. And, you know, I do my own version of this because on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, et al., you know how, you know, one sees one's friends, you know, either, you know, maybe it's a birthday celebration they're having or they're on vacation somewhere gorgeous. And all the comments are, you know, oh my God, happy birthday, or wow, that resort looks amazing. And so I deliberately will leave a comment saying, happy birthday, hope you had great birthday sex. Or fabulous vacation resort, hope you had great sex on that beach. Because you know they are.
Okay? Yeah.
And the thing is, when you normalize that, you know, my friends go, oh, ha, ha, Cindy, yes, we did. You know, I mean, they're very willing to respond. And that's the power of, everybody is dying to talk about sex and everybody wants more openness around it. And so when in the course of your day-to-day life, you have an opportunity to normalize that, please do, because all of that is helping what we call ourselves at Make Love Not Porn, which is the social sex revolution. The revolution part is not the sex. It's the fact we're finally making it social.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I had a follow-up question, which was, you know, what can I, as a cis white man in my 40s, you know, rush off and do as well to aid this cause? But that might be it. You might have just told me what
to
do.
Yeah,
and have a conversation with my children as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, Tim, what is wonderful is that more and more parents are buying their teenage and 20-something children subscriptions to Make Love Not Porn because they tell us, I want my kids to see what happy, healthy, loving sexual relationships look like.
Absolutely. It's so funny, isn't it? I mean, it was a bit of a revolution for me, but I think, you know, the first time my 7-year-old daughter sort of approached the subject was a few years ago, actually. I had this panic, you know, the initial panic that you have, and, you know, even through doing this work. But in a similar way to anybody that you care deeply about and love, whether it's your parents or your children, what of course you wish for them is pleasure, happiness, and love, and, you know, all of the wonderful things that come with that. And yeah, the best way to facilitate that into reality is, you know, is what people are groping around for.
Timmy, you are spot on with that. You know, I've said for years, you know, I wish parents would, and again, this is what I'm trying to help them do. You know, I wish parents would realize that as a parent, to your point, all you want is for your child to be happy.
Mm.
And everything we're talking about is going to affect their happiness more than any other area of their lives. You know, Make Love Not Porn operates in the single biggest market of them all. Not sex, not porn, the market of human happiness.
Mm. Yeah, no, and that's, you know, as much colored plastic as you can throw at them just doesn't have the same effect.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. That's good, good. Right, well, so currently then, what can people do to find you, support you, all the rest of it? Makelove.porn.tv.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Please, you know, it's free to sign up, but do take out a subscription. They start at $10 a month, so it's eminently affordable.
Yeah.
I would love Kiwi investors. So anybody out there who is or knows an open-minded investor, it's Cindy at makelovenotporn.com.
Brilliant.
You can find me and Make Love Not Porn on Twitter and Instagram at Cindy Gallup at Make Love Not Porn. We're on Facebook, MLNP TV. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find out more about me at cindygallup.com. And also, I've just, in the last few weeks, started a Substack newsletter.
Oh,
because basically, over the years, in amongst, you know, all those thousands of emails about Make Love Not Porn, I have gotten a ton of emails asking for sex advice. because people have had nowhere else to go. And no matter how busy I am, when I get an email, as I did years ago, from a teenage boy who wrote to me and said, you know, I'm having sex with my girlfriend. I want to know how to make love, not porn. Please tell me, because my parents sure as hell won't.
Yeah.
When I get an email like that, I write back at length. and he replied and said that his girlfriend went, where did you learn that? So anyway, I also get a ton of questions on social media. I don't have time to answer. So I've started a Substack. It's called Dear Cindy. Brilliant. And basically anybody can ask me any question you like about sex, about life, about dating, about relationships, whatever. And every Monday I answer one of those questions. So do check out Dear Cindy on Substack, and please send me your questions. As I hope you realize by now, you can literally ask me anything.
Okay. Oh, I should have written some more racy ones in there, written down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, off to Substack we go then. Hey, it's been really, really great talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on. And it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll get you on again for a catch up in the future as well.
Absolutely. No, I've thoroughly enjoyed this, Tim. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much indeed.
Okay, that was Cindy Gallup, everybody. I hope you really enjoyed that. As you know, I really did. Now, Toshi, you've prepared some clips of that as well.
Yes.
They'll be doing the rounds.
Yep, we're rolling those out on Instagram and TikTok.
Yep.
All the best bits.
Yeah, bite-sized Cindy.
Yeah.
She did a great job of plugging all of her socials and links and websites and stuff like that at the end of the interview. But go find out more about her. She's really amazing. If you've got any... what was it? Something... Yeah, LinkedIn. Prolific LinkedIner.
Yeah.
Check her out. Google her and... support her any which way you can. Now then, our answers, in fact.
Our answers to the
Would
questions.
You like to read out the... These are the questions that we posed at the beginning of the show. Do you want to read out the answers?
Yeah. Yes. So, the average age that kids are first watching porn is 12.
Oh my god.
Which is young, but they also did research and it showed that they are seeing it when they're as young as 7.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... crazy, and it's like year 3 if you're in New Zealand.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Like halfway through primary school.
I know. Now, this is something that I guess people can't necessarily avoid, but there were some good tips in the Cindy interview that we just did, and also next time in the Joe Roberts interview about talking about porn to your children. Not everybody has kids, obviously, but there's some interesting tips and stuff in there. So if they have been exposed to it, tends to be that the younger they are, I think, they've been exposed to it versus having searched for it.
Right.
I think.
Anyway.
But yeah. Sorry, carry on.
Question 2. So the average amount of time that penetrative sex lasts, I did a study of a whole bunch of couples and it was 5.4 minutes.
Okay.
And I was doing some research and some male porn stars, have to go for 3 hours.
They have to?
Yeah.
It's
part of their job, so they have to take pills and things to make sure that they can do that.
Yeah.
Because...
there's numbing wipes, I think.
Oh, okay.
As well. Yeah, that exist.
Wow.
I'm sure I've heard those, or had those advertised to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. 5.4 minutes is the average.
Right, there we go.
So that's...
and that's penetrative sex.
Yeah.
So everybody should, or could, instead of focusing on the penetration as the goal, enjoy everything before and after.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And check out May Love Not Porn as well. Might get some tips on there.
Yeah, some ideas.
Cool.
Question 3. So the average length of an American penis is 5 inches.
Mm-hmm.
What length penis do gay and bisexual men picture in their fantasies? It's 7.1 inches.
7.1.
Yeah, which is 18 centimeters.
Golly.
Which is like more than half a ruler.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, 30 something centimeters. Yeah. 12 inches. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. That is... Like I said, or, I don't know how specific people are getting in their fantasies. Maybe they should show them pictures instead.
Well, but yeah, I was thinking about it, like, because I guess you must have to, like, imagine it and then be like, this is what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
And then they have to measure that.
Yeah.
Because it's in your mind.
Yeah, it's completely
so, in your mind. I don't know.
Oh, funny. Oh, well, that's interesting. Awesome. Okay, so, let's wrap this baby up. Like we said, coming up next week. Did I say next week? Am I ever promising there?
Next episode.
Let's do another one next week.
Yeah.
It's in the bag already.
Yeah.
I know. The interview with Jo Robertson. She's a New Zealand-based sex therapist, betrayal trauma specialist, and parent consultant. For a sneak peek, go to jorobertson.org. And on the subject of guests, get involved, everybody. We have a large list of people we are going to approach and want to speak to.
Yeah.
But if there's anybody out there, or anybody knows anybody, or anybody has any thoughts on the topics we should be covering, or who we should be speaking to, let us know through any means necessary.
Yeah. Find us however you like.
Yeah.
We'll listen.
We will listen. Yeah, smoke signals or something like that. yeah, but otherwise, hello@sexandspace.com. Flick us an email.
Mm.
But we diligently check our DMs as well.
Yeah.
Talking of DMs, check us out on socials, etc. Toshi is doing a great job. I'm going to wade into this TikTok space a little bit myself.
Yeah.
My face will be briefly featured.
Yeah.
On the Cindy Gallup clips. My leg was featured the other day.
It was.
Getting waxed.
Surprised no one commented on that. No one said anything about it.
No. And no one thought it was your hairy leg.
Yeah, because in one of those videos I didn't actually say whose it was.
Yeah,
I just let it go.
Maybe, maybe the sort of body hair acceptance thing is
so
that's coming through. I think actually it's still a bit bald.
Okay,
it might be coming back. Was it even this leg? No, it wasn't. It was this one. Yeah, no, it's still looking.
Oh yeah,
lovely and smooth.
I was quite proud of myself because the first time I've used wax, so that could have gone horribly wrong.
Could have gone horribly wrong. But, not as painful as I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
It wasn't a...
Yeah.
It wasn't a 40-year-old virgin moment. and I don't have much chest hair. We couldn't pull that off. Cool. All right. Yeah. So, yeah. TikTok. Mm. That's sexandspace.com.
Yeah.
With a 3. But like you said, if you search it, it's all there. Instagram as well. Mm-hmm. Sexandspace.com.
Facebook.
We were umming and ahhing about delving into Twitter.
Mm.
But I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Not my area of expertise, but...
No. Gets a bit ranty, dear old Twitter. Mm. Yeah, no, I haven't. We will see.
Yeah, we'll see. You might find us there.
You may find us there if we...
Yeah. Or you may not.
Awesome. Now, other business. We wrote a book. Jane Cherrington, who's a part of this project, she did the writing. I did some graphics. Toshi's done some Facebook ads promoting it.
Yeah. That's my contribution.
And yeah, it's out there. It's for sale. Mm-hmm. You can find it at sexandspace.com/book. And it's all about an organ that education forgot.
Yeah.
over history. Yeah, it's about the clitoris. It's a little book about the clitoris. It's very nice, very digestible, very accessible, very non-threatening.
Yeah.
Super informative and interesting, a nice way to step into, like I said, you know, what might be a confronting subject for some people, but also thought starter, conversation starter. It's a
little doorway.
Little doorway, a little gentle prod into the kind of information that we all missed out on.
Mm.
And yeah, this book is out there and can help. So yeah, check it out. So yeah, sexandspace.com/book. It's on Amazon is where you buy it from.
Yeah.
And ooh, and the video on the landing page.
Yeah.
Little competition for everybody, I guess. I don't know what the prize is. gleeful joy and satisfaction, probably. But
yeah.
See if you can spot the world famous celebrity that is in our book reaction video. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to go and watch it to find out.
You have to go and watch it to find out. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to take any more. Go check it out. sexandspace.com/book. Celebrity spotting. Cool. And while you've done that, listen to some other podcasts. There's some other cool ones we've done out there. Mm. Yeah, check those out. If you feel like rating us or reviewing us on anything, that's always helpful. What else we got going on? Anything else we want to say? Add to this?
Just tune in.
Tune in. Yeah. Check out the TikTok.
Yeah.
What's coming up on the TikTok? What's the next video?
We're doing a unpacking porn series.
Oh yeah, that's
so right. So if you're interested in anything to do with that, got myth busting. Obviously we're, you know, showing people who are doing work in this space. Looking at facts, looking at things like, can porn be addictive? So just breaking it down. If you have any questions that you want us to answer,
yeah,
then again, let us know and we'll address them. Make a little video for you with some answers, some research.
All our new male followers, I wonder what they're going to they're going to make of it all.
I wonder what they want to know.
I wonder what they want to know. Awesome. All right. Well, that's cool. All right then, everybody. See you on the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
If you found some of this material a little challenging, keep coming back and we'll make it really challenging.